This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. The Seahawks signature used to be the finish. And I say this,
finisher.
Paul. Yeah, no, there was every year I would say, okay, it gets to be about December. You know what it's time? It's time to write the old Seahawks finish strong story. You start out with a little mention of 2012 when they went on this run, won five straight games, scored 150 points in three games. Mix in a little 2014 when they won six in a row to go charging into the playoffs, claim the number one seed in the NFC. Then you reference back to Pete's time at USC when they were just monsters in November, and you got yourself a nice little storyline here, like, woo, it's time for the Seahawks to go. Seattle hasn't been bad in December. They still win 60% of their games in December. They just haven't been great. They've gone from, in Pete's first 5 years, they were a team that played good and then was great at the end of the season. And now they're a team that plays great up until December and then tails off. Like, it's happened now a couple of different times where you've seen these noticeable declines in the final month. I'm not sure of the reason.
You've played Mortal Kombat before, right?
Yes, finish him.
They're like a person that was great.
Fatality.
At Mortal Kombat. They knew all the fatalities. You're right. They knew all the combinations, which, by the way, I never figured out how to do. It's embarrassing. It's like they forgot how to do them. They forgot how to do the fatalities. They whatever they wrote down on that piece of paper that they kept as like the holy grail of fatalities, they don't know where it went. But I don't know how it got to this point. And you've been here for a while. I'm sure there's something that you have noticed that's missing.
Well, the best rationale that I come up with, because Pete was always asked about this, why do you guys get better? He's like, I don't really know. The best that I can figure is we like to play young players. And he had a formula for how he played rookies, which was you get a rookie involved, even if it's some sort of minor package, you give him something to do the first couple months of the season. You give him a spot that you think he's going to excel, and you give him the sort of the feedback, and you're feeling good about it, and then you broaden out what he does. And by the time you get to November and December, that guy has a bigger role. He's playing with more confidence, and you've got a better player than you had at the beginning of the season. That the growth, the learning curve for a rookie, and because of their willingness to play young guys, they don't play young guys as much anymore. Now, some of that is a product of your success. You're not going to start a young player ahead of Bobby Wagner or necessarily ahead of KJ Wright when Richard Sherman was here. I think there's also become an increasing reluctance to live through the mistakes that rookies make. And so Pete Carroll will talk about the desire to play rookies. Do we really see it? Will Dissly played as a rookie until he got hurt last season. We've seen Rashad Penny, but he was kind of an afterthought as a rookie. LJ Collier didn't play at all. Like he wasn't out there. Marquise Blair, and there were some injuries with him in the offseason with his hip, and then some conversation about his ankle late in the year. Cody Barton got some time after Michael Kendricks got hurt, but he's buried on the depth chart. They're not playing as many young guys, and maybe that's why you're seeing a lack of improvement, that they don't have that sort of the rookie who starts peaking at the end of his season and coming into his own. And instead, they've got older guys who maybe tend to wear down and are more vulnerable to injuries. Apparently, I'm more vulnerable right now.
Vulnerable to the English language, taking advantage of you. This is one of the things that also I've noticed. One of the younger players, Trey Flowers, got worse as the season progressed. He had a really, I think, good stretch in the middle of the year. And then at the end of the season, I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden he started regressing. And that's a bad sign when you start to see your young players regressing. The other thing is, there are no rules against child labor in the National Football League. There aren't.
Yes, there are. You can't draft 16-year-olds.
Bring out the children. Children, go on the field.
I mean, that's what Rasheem Green essentially was when he took the field last year.
So young.
I mean, I don't think I think maybe Stacey and I asked him one time if he knew what a Walkman was, and he was like, what?
Oh,
like, come
gosh.
On.
Now that's rich. You and Stacey calling someone young.
I mean, we're old at heart. That's why.
No, it's not at all. You're surrounded by old people, including people who can't even understand exactly what analytics are when they're given different
the
feedback.
The cooking people, Danny?
No, it's more like Warren Sharp's talking about the Seahawks and their offense.
You don't have to do the pre-snap motion all the time, do you, Dave?
I'm sorry, who was that?
Warren
That's
Sharp.
Warren Sharp. Okay, and what does he do?
He's one of the...
He runs Sharp football.
He runs Sharp Football.
It's such a diss.
It is.
Because it's his last name.
Yeah, here it is, and he says stuff like this.
I think that there are times, yes. It's, here's the thing. With Brian, my general opinion is, would I like to see some things done a little bit differently?
This is Warren Sharp talking about Brian Schottenheimer.
Yes. Is it entirely his fault? Like, how much of it is the core philosophy? How much of it is things that are above his pay grade, so to speak? That's a factor. And then the other thing is, when Russ does these great things in the fourth quarter and has these comebacks and all this stuff, Russ tends to get all the credit for that, right? But not every single play is just a pure audible, I'm just going to go back and make magic happen, right? There's some really good plays that get dialed up along the way to bring these teams back. And Brian tends to get very little to no credit for any of that type of thing. So I do think he gets unfairly criticized in general. But is he perfect? Does he need to improve in any way? He's not perfect, and he does need to improve, yes.
There are some things I think that can improve about the way that they go about doing things. Now, the cooking people say they were to put together a cooking show. I'm very curious as to how they would go through it. Probably sounds a lot like NPR.
You would want four parts of Russell.
Yes.
Throw in some chicken stock. Mm-hmm. You're definitely cooking at high heat. There's no slow cooker involved. The cooking people, the people who want to let Russ cook, are not thinking crock pot.
I'm sorry, who was that?
The cooking people, Dave.
Come on,
the people,
Dave,
who want to let Russ cook.
Pour a little pepper in there. Oh, yeah, you stir it. Season it nice and good.
Is Brian Schottenheimer, I'd look at the Seahawks offense, and I think that any complaints that people have really don't relate to Brian Schottenheimer. They really don't. Like, if you're complaining about the offensive coordinator, I think you're complaining about Pete's template more than you are about the play calls.
And during the season, I remember feeling crazy, and I actually asked you guys before saying it on the air because of how crazy I felt saying it, just given my previous opinions of Brian Schottenheimer. But before all the injuries happened, did I not say on this very show, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back here, I'm just highlighting, I was surprised that I said it, Brian Schottenheimer deserves a lot of credit for this past season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird because he does, and then all of a sudden everything kind of went in a different direction. And there are elements, I think, that of head coaches across the league where sometimes they can't, they have a hard time letting others have control of things. And look, we're seeing it right now. Mike Vrabel is probably going to be the defensive coordinator of the Tennessee Titans this coming season.
Dean Pease is retired, so he's probably just essentially taken over that spot.
Exactly. Bill O'Brien is the general manager and head coach of the Houston Texans. There was, I forget what the other guy, but there's another situation going on across the NFL where a head coach has decided, you know what, I'm going to be a coordinator here. Doug Peterson's likely going to be the Philadelphia Eagles offensive coordinator. Just thought of it. And I wonder if maybe there are times where Pete Carroll gets in the way of what Brian Schottenheimer wants to do, and it turns into some miscommunication and maybe delays of game on the one-yard line.
I think we're talking about something that is happening, but the location of that pitch is off. The velocity is right, but the location is off. And here's what I mean. Pete is not someone who strong-arms people. He's not someone who says, I think you should call this play. He's like, but he is someone who gives parameters of, this is the style we want to play. And he does want a physical run game. It's not just that he wants a run game. He wants a physical run game. I don't think that this is a case of a play call going in and then Pete saying, no, I don't like that, run it.
I don't think it's like that either. And if we want to go with the cooking show comparison, you got Brian Schottenheimer. He's at the grill. He's flipping the burgers. You know how there's always that one person that comes over to the grill and he's like, oh yeah, you want to poke it a little bit right there.
Don't mess with the meat.
But there are some people that will like come over and they will basically backseat drive you at the grill. I'm not saying Pete necessarily does that. I'm wondering if Pete every now and then comes over and he's like, yeah, maybe we run it here. What do you think? And that, just that little amount of asking if you do something else, questioning, maybe that kind of takes away from the overall offensive experience.
I think that there's the ingredients get told to the chef there. That it's not a matter of, I don't like how you're preparing the meal. It's more a matter of, oh, so you're going to do some shish kebabs there and some veggie. Oh. No, I think we want hamburgers and hot dogs. That's what's at a cookout. And you're like, well, but people have been trying this carne asada, and it's really good, and it's popular, and we can get some. Burgers and hot dogs are what are a proven formula for satisfying picnics.
The kebabs sound good, though.
I think that there's an element here of this is what we do. That's not sort of the – I don't think he's big-footing the offensive coordinator in terms of – and the play is coming in late because they're bickering over it. I think that he's –
I don't think that either, by the way.
That he's providing guideposts to come in. The plays coming in late is an issue, and that needs to be ironed out. Like, that is something that is happening. I'm not sure the mechanics for that, and it's possible that it is, that there's indecision going on about what they're going to call. They don't, especially early in games, whatever's happening to cause the play clock to be ticking down five, four, as they get, that needs to stop because it's unnecessary, and there's no reason. Like, that's a really frustrating part of the team. I think that with Pete Carroll in the offense, he's someone who used to contract out his offense as a head coach when he was with the Jets and with the Patriots. He would hire someone, and that person would run the offense. And he would have some say over it, but the other person was running the offense. He has more of a hand in it now, but I think it's the general direction, not the specific play calls.
Gotcha. Okay. So it's every now and then hinting at this is where we should go. What do you do if you're the coordinator in that situation, though? Like, that's the tricky part, because if the head coach, I mean, technically, he's your boss, and he comes up to you and he says, I mean, we should be doing this. What happens if you don't? What happens if you decide to go against the orders? I mean, is Gordon Ramsay, if we can keep on going with the cooking show, is Gordon Ramsay going to come in and just start yelling at you? Ah! Like, you know, the way he does on those television shows? I don't know. I think he actually speaks English when he does it, and he usually says something really mean. I think 90% of it.
You're lucky you haven't killed someone. That was the one I saw most recently.
He says with like a British accent.
Too much that was room temperature. I think the way it plays out, and again, this is my speculation, I think the way it plays out is that in the review of a game, the first two games of 2018, they started out slow. They lost. They were 0-2. And Pete came away from that. So we're throwing the ball too much. Let's get back to running the ball. And I think that's how it happens.
Yeah.
And that the game plan is constructed with an understanding of how often they're going to throw it. My complaints about the offense generally don't boil down to the plays that Brian Schottenheimer is calling. I think it's the general approach that they take,
okay,
and the slow progression into the game to establish the physical run portion of the offense.
Yeah, I know. It's like they're smashing with a hammer into the meat. And I mean, okay, cool. But I think there are better ways to like tenderize the meat. You get a little lime juice on it. You ever done that?
Mm-hmm.
Lime juice. Lime juice is the way to go. You get the marinade bag, put a little lime in it. Yeah, it's fantastic.
How do you deal with a backseat barbecue, a backseat griller? Someone comes over and starts telling you.
Yeah, I get the spatula and go, pow!
That is one way to do it.
I'm just kidding. I don't do that. That's violent.
One for flipping, one for smacking?
Right. Yeah.
Use the poker. The fork, which is the most useless of all barbecue.
That's
implements.
All that thing is for, is to shoo people away, right?
There is no point in that. Like, people, well, it's for hot dogs. You want to pop the hot dog before you give it to people? You want to get rid of all of the things that are best about the hot dog, which is, like, of course you have to let it simmer down so it's not molten hot, squirting into your mouth as you bite into it. Like, you've got to be able to, but the fork is an absolutely useless barbecue implement.
Did not sound appetizing.
What about the paintbrush?
That I like the baster.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, you baste a little sauce. Oh. Yeah. Put a nice glaze.
I thought that was a turkey baster. That's like the little bulbous thing. Talking about a meat paintbrush.
Yes, that's correct. You paint it on. That's how you apply, especially to ribs, a finishing glaze. Absolutely fantastic.
Meat paintbrush.
Now I'm hungry.
It's Danny and Gallant. It's time for us to go around the NFL.
Where's my meat?
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Jess.
Friday.
It is Friday. You're headed to Houston.
I am headed to Houston.
H-Town, hold it down.
Let's go. Major League Rugby. I've got a game tomorrow on ESPN News and on Sunday on Fox Sports 2.
With the Sabercats.
The Sabercats, yes.
Fun fact about the Houston Sabercats, I tried out for them last year.
No kidding.
Yep. They gave me a jersey. Guess what it says on the back?
Game breaker?
Water boy.
That's funny.
It was really funny. Although it kind of hurt me inside that they gave me that. Oh.
Did you get tackled?
Yeah.
How'd you hold up to it?
You know, I can hold my own.
You weren't like Adam Sandler, Waterboy.
No. I wasn't killing people. No,
unleash the beast. No.
Yeah, right. I wasn't envisioning people saying water sucks. It really, really sucks, or anything like that.
Gatorade.
Peter Schrager from NFL Network, Fox Sports. Whoops. Congratulations.
That I did not mean to play. I was like, wow, Lydia's got a drop. Nope, that Shregs. Was me accidentally playing
Shregs.
Some audio. Okay, speaking of exceptional days, Patrick Mahomes due for a gigantic payday. He's 24 years old, has a Super Bowl ring, and will likely sign a new deal after the draft.
Look, I say get it done as quickly as you possibly can, because every single second that you wait, there is a chance that that price elevates. The thing is, if you're Patrick Mahomes, what's the rush? Are you concerned that you potentially dislocate your kneecap again? I don't know. Maybe there's something like that. But if I'm Patrick Mahomes, I think your value only goes up the longer you wait. And yeah, you're maybe playing a little bit of a gambling game by not signing that extension. But I would be very, very patient if I were him right now. He's got all the power.
I don't think it's in his best interest to sign a long-term extension right now, and I would predict that it comes after next season, because he's going to want to wait. He's going to want to see what it looks like. And they do have, it's a four-year contract, but they have a fifth-year option. I think Mahomes' best interest is to wait, see what Dak Prescott does, and then negotiate off of that. He should reset the market.
After 13 seasons, veteran defensive back Eric Weddle is retiring.
He had a great career. And he was an awesome player. And
funny player.
Yeah, last year with the Rams, the year before that with the Ravens, and then prior to that with the Chargers. He'll be a borderline Hall of Fame candidate.
I was curious as far as asking John Clayton that question a little bit earlier. And I didn't want to sound like a doofus by asking the question, but you just saw two safeties get into the Hall of Fame. He's not Troy Polamalu. Could you compare his career to Steve Atwater? Is that somewhat close? And they're totally different players. Atwater was known as just an absolutely brutal hitter, just smashing people like, what's his name? Guy in the Chiefs. Fella McFellapants, of course. You remember him.
Huh. Eric Berry?
No. The guy that, who was that? Was it?
This is a great game.
I know. This is really bad. I'm doing a terrible job
Eric.
Explaining it.
Ron Cherry.
I don't know his name. How do I not know his name?
Hitter.
I'm not even sure of his
safety?
Name. No, fullback. For the Chiefs. The guy.
Next.
Everyone drawing blanks?
Barry Word, Christian Okoye?
Christian Okoye!
The guy who flattened Wyman.
Yeah, come on.
You guys didn't help me out.
You didn't say Nigerian.
Oh, should I have said that?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Like,
probably the most obvious kill.
Yeah, fair point.
Like, and he's a fullback.
I guess I didn't know his
guy went to Azusa Pacific. Like, of all the different things, you picked the least significant identifying
fullback.
Factor of him.
Chiefs fullback.
Like, massively receding hairline. That would have been better than just saying fullback.
I don't see countries.
Anyway, in the ongoing saga that is Dak Prescott's contract with the Cowboys, things are quote-unquote fixin' to heat up.
Fixin'.
I'm going to enjoy watching this. Honestly, the deal gets done. I can't imagine he goes and does it ends up being franchise tagged. I don't think Dallas will do that. There's a big part of me that wants it to happen, though, and that's the circus they deserve.
Yes.
How do you get to this point with him? How do you get to this point where you're basically having to threaten your quarterback with a franchise tag?
Because you handled the Ezekiel Elliott situation the way that you handled it last offseason, and you handled the Emmitt Smith situation a couple years back the way you did it then, and you handled the Amari Cooper contract situation to a point where he's probably going to be a free agent, unrestricted, and you can't do anything about it. They bungled this. And look, I know Jerry Jones is a little bit more hands-off than he used to be with the Cowboys, but the hands are still there enough. That if you're a Cowboy fan,
hands,
you're pissed. Because this is something that just keeps on happening.
You extended Ezekiel Elliott a year before you had to.
Right.
Right? Because he was going to have another option year after this one. You extended him because that's what he wanted. And now the more important player, which is Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott is the more important player to your offense. You might argue that Amari Cooper is more important to the Cowboys than Ezekiel Elliott.
I agree. Now, just based off of what we saw this past season.
And now you've got both of those guys headed toward free.
Yeah, good luck. Nice job, Cowboys.
NFL.com has ranked the rookies and graded each team. We look at the AFC South, and the Jacksonville Jaguars got an A-. Obviously, we all know about Gardner Minshew and his fabulous year. The Gardner Minshew.
Our beloved Cougs.
What do you think about the Jaguars, though? Do they have a shot at rising in the ranks?
It depends on the quarterback. They do have a shot. If Gardner Minshew is an average NFL starting quarterback, like if he's an average NFL starting quarterback, yes, they do have a shot.
The AFC South is not a bad division, but it's a division where everyone's somewhat mired in mediocrity, and they're held back by a giant, giant issue. Tennessee does not have a quarterback. The Houston Texans do not have a great head coach. The Indianapolis Colts do not have a quarterback. And with the Jaguars, they have talent. Yeah, they've moved on from some of it. My big question is Doug Marrone the guy? And I am surprised that they stuck with him. I think Doug Marrone's better, though, than a lot of people give him credit for.
They also have, what is the linebacker? Is it
Miles Kelvin's, Jack?
No, Jack is there.
Talvin Smith?
Is he going to come back and play?
I don't know.
Because he took the year off.
I don't know.
That would make a difference.
It definitely would. I mean, they have speed. They have athleticism. And Leonard Fournette wasn't terrible last season, all things considered, because he's a bit of a chonk at running back.
You guys want to root for the Jaguars together?
Jaguars. You know what? Now that they've got the cool uniforms back, yes. Because remember when they had like the two-toned helmets?
Yeah, the two-toned helmet stunk.
It was the worst. It looked like
it wasn't the worst. The worst was when they wore the urine uniforms. They're the only team that wore
that is dead.
Yeah,
with the two-toned helmets, like the two. It looked like they fell asleep in their own puke. Like that's basically what I thought when I saw those things.
That's oddly accurate.
Yeah, it's gross. I don't know what they were doing.
Panthers GM Marty Herney says that Cam Newton is rehabbing right now.
It's going to be an interesting question. I think there's no way Newton's not back in Carolina. This season will determine whether or not he's there long term. Do you think there's a chance he's gone this year?
Yeah. But the problem is, they can't tell themselves that Kyle Allen's any good.
No.
What do you do? What do you do in the draft? And Panthers draft selection, I'm off the top of my head, I'm not sure what it is.
Probably fifth or sixth overall, right?
They're in that, like
five games, six games?
They're in that weird area where they might be within range to trade up for Tua. And they're also within range where maybe Tua slides to them, depending on how people feel about his hip. That is, I think, the team to watch when it comes to Tua Tagovailoa. And you know what? I got to say, of all the teams in the NFC right now, not the Seattle Seahawks and not the Cardinals, who I talked about a little bit earlier, the Panthers are really intriguing to me because I really like Matt Rhule as a hire. I think that Dave Tepper as an owner has some different ideas, and I feel like they would be the kind of team that's aggressive and it's like, you know what? It's time. We're going to go get a quarterback of the future, and I really like Tua Tagovailoa.
I like Tua. I'd be worried about hitching my wagon to him if I'm a rebuilding team when you've got that health consideration.
Yeah, it's
that's
a big
there.
One. It's the hip, man.
I wouldn't get rid of Cam Newton. He's too good, and you're taking a chance that he's going to get back to being healthy when it looks like he might be physically breaking down. But if I was them, I would not move on from Cam Newton until I was pretty sure I had a better option as a replacement.
And I think that's why they're being so coy about it, because they want to trade him. Because I think you could get something in return for him. What? I don't know. But maybe that's a part of trading up in the draft.
It's Danny and Gallant. Coming up next, the cooking people. That's what Jim Moore is referring to as the people who want to see Russell Wilson throw a little bit more. We're going to have some fun with that idea next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
This is Danny and Gallant. Dave Wyman had finally had enough yesterday. After a week of postseason dissection in which we've gone six ways to Sunday trying to figure out how do you help the defense, and maybe it's by improving the offense, Dave Wyman had finally had enough. And he said that all this fixation on the offense, he thought it was just strange.
I guess I just don't feel like this is the year to complain about that kind of stuff. Because, you know, I'm sorry, on offense, the injuries weren't everything, because you have Russell Wilson, but those were some big, major injuries. Your backup center was going in and out of the game because of his finger dislocation, you know, and Joey Hunt, I mean, he did a great job, but, you know, you had that, you had Will Disley, and then when your entire running back core goes down, it's just, yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. I have to remind myself, it was Carson, ProSize, and Penny all got hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that to me, and you won 12 games, including the playoffs. It just, to me, is it just seems like a very weird off-season topic that we're talking about this.
It's also understandable because in today's NFL, you have a limited allotment of resources. You don't have an infinite budget. You have a salary cap. You don't have the luxury of always deciding, well, this is the type of personnel I want, because some of it's, here's the type of personnel we have, and how do you make the most of it? And at this point in Russell Wilson's career, honest question about is making the best of it, trying to have Russell fit in that cog with a physical run game, or is it to make it look like Kansas City, or honestly, to make it look like Seattle did in 2015 when they just started firing the ball all
over. It's funny, I've heard this 2015 time brought up, and I got to go back and watch it myself to get a good feel for it. Why did they go away from it if it worked so well? Did they go to it maybe because they didn't have a running back? Is that why they...
Some of it.
Okay.
Some of it was because you had Thomas Rawls, who was extremely and had some big games, but their running game wasn't nearly effective. Their pass protection was a serious problem. Like, they were definitely in the throes of adjusting, and Tom Cable was their offensive line coach. They were making a transition there, and the pass protection wasn't there. Some of it was just, hey, Marshawn Lynch is out with an abdominal injury, and the ball's just got to come out. Over a seven-game stretch in which they went 6-1, he threw 24 touchdown passes and was picked off once.
Yeah, I remember that stretch because in the fantasy football the next year, I drafted Russ in like the second round. I was like, yeah, we're going all in.
And you think about, normally we say like Russell 25 pass attempts is usually about the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of those games, he threw more than 25 times. Every single one of them. His completion percentage was up near 70%. It was the stretch of time that you really, and you look back at it now and you're like, what was wrong with that? Why did we go? Not only that, Jimmy Graham was hurt for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jimmy Graham went out. They won a game against Pittsburgh, which was kind of the seminal moment where they won a game in which an opponent scored more than 25 points, and that had happened. That had not happened with Russell Wilson as the quarterback. In my mind, the last question was answered. Russell's your franchise guy. No more like, oh, can he do it if you need it? Can he be the prime? Like, there it was. He's pocket passer, seven-game stretch, one of the most efficient stretch runs of a quarterback in NFL history. Would it be better to go back to that? And I think that's what people are referring to, kind of that style of offense, when they talk about letting Russ cook.
That makes sense. And, I mean, it's possible for them to get back to it. Would you say they're better at wide receiver now than they are then, than they were then?
I don't think they're worse. You had Doug Baldwin. You had Jermaine Kearse.
DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett right now, to me, Danny, you were watching it. To me, that's like way better than those two. Nothing against Doug Baldwin. It's more about Jermaine Kearse, your number two wide receiver.
They're different, right? The guys now are different. They're faster.
Mm-hmm.
They're definitely faster. Jermaine Kearse, pretty effective receiver, and Doug Baldwin was one of the best slot receiver. And I don't even want to say he was one of the best slot. His productivity, he could play on the outside, and he was great on third downs. He was an awesome third down receiver.
Baldwin was a great receiver, and from that point on, developed. I think he got better over the next couple of years, too. But like with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, you're talking about two top 30 receivers, and possibly even like top 20 or so. Like, these are two of the better receivers in the game. I don't know that Kearse was ever in that conversation.
Yeah, he was a guy that tended to make big catches.
Right.
And I thought was underrated even here. But you're right. Nobody's putting him in a list of like one of the... DK Metcalf might be an absolute game-changing kind of player. And the question of what you do with it, well, that comes back, and Jim has a different expression for the let Russ cook people.
We've talked about this before. I don't think any of us are going, hey, he needs to throw the ball more often. To me, it's about...
But isn't that what the cooking people want?
I don't care.
It's just so many layers of grumpy old guys in it.
The cooking people.
Isn't I don't care!
Isn't that what the cooking people want? And that decision about which direction you take that, I think it's an interesting point, even if I don't think that Pete's going to entertain it as much as I think he should.
Oh, he won it all. I
think that he's going to look at it and say, like Wyman said, that, hey, our top three running backs were hurt. Like, we were down to bringing back Turbin, playing Travis Homer, who hadn't had much time and is probably a little bit smaller than we liked, and signing Marshawn Lynch the week after he was handing out tequila shots in Oakland.
Yeah, the balance worked. The balance worked to perfection, I thought, against the Vikings. I thought that when they could actually establish the run, it really worked this past season. I mean, they imposed their will on teams. Philadelphia wasn't the best day to throw the football around with all those gusty winds. You saw Carson Wentz miss a wide open Miles Sanders for a touchdown. You saw, or excuse me, yeah, it was Carson Wentz. You saw also in that game, Russell Wilson miss a wide open touchdown pass too. It was a funky day. But Rashad Penny just bludgeoned and ran all over the Eagles. And, you know, I think it is important to note for the people that aren't Rashad Penny fans, drafting a running back at the back of the first round, he didn't qualify for the yards per carry number in terms of like being among the top. 5.8 yards a carry. 5.8. That's really good for those who are like, oh, you don't draft a running back in the first round. And I know that you sometimes fall into that conversation.
No, no, I totally fall into
that conversation. Oh, so you're all the time in that conversation.
Yes.
It's back of the first round, I think it's different.
No, it's not.
What? Okay, so what's the difference between like pick 29 and pick, let's say, 34?
That's the whole point, is that with a running back, the round in which he's picked plays no predictive value. You're not more likely to have a stud running back with a first-round draft pick than you are with a seventh-round draft pick. Statistically, you should use your first-round pick on guys where, hey, this is where the player picked here tends to be better. Quarterbacks picked in the first round, by and large, tend to be significantly better than quarterbacks picked in the fifth round. Just in terms of productivity, I'm not talking about the teams they go to. With running backs, it's not true.
But here's one of the things that drives me crazy with you can find a running back anywhere, that conversation. Like, the idea that you can just, that you're just going to find a guy in the third round, to me, is ridiculous. Like, that, and I'll go back to the New England Patriots in 1997, where they had Curtis Martin, who in 95, 96, and 97, third round pick, was awesome for them. And basically, they did not let Pete Carroll, who was then coaching the Patriots, keep Curtis Martin, because they were like, yeah, we can find a guy in the third round. And to their credit, they found a guy in the first round, and Robert Edwards, he got hurt. I just think the idea, and that goes to your conversation, like, you never know when these guys are going to get hurt. He got hurt in a flag football game on the beach.
He Paul Gallanted.
Well, let's watch it. Let's watch it.
You suffer injuries playing flag football.
I know.
I've seen I've seen three of them so far.
You're a game breaker and a bone breaker.
Even the fact that he has suffered a career-changing injury in a flag football game shows the risks that you're willing to take as an athlete.
You know, that's true. I mean, I am a hero out there. Yeah. I'm just kidding. Look, going back to this, finding a running back in the middle of the draft and acting like it's easy is nuts to me. Like,
you're right.
You can find a guy who's more talented towards the top.
Totally agree. Here's why I think it's nuts to draft a running back in the first round, is because if I tell you, okay, you're going to take this running back in the first round, and I'm going to say, this guy, a first-round running back, is no more likely to be successful historically than a running back you select in the sixth round. A quarterback you select in the first round is significantly more likely to be better than a quarterback you draft. It's just odds. It's the way you use the resource. It's not about keeping him or how important a running back is, or even saying, like, I'm not going to re-sign this good running back because I'm sure that I'll find someone because there's someone running around the crawl space in the draft. It's simply an odds thing. If I tell you that you're not any more likely to get a good player here in the first round than you are in the second round.
I think you are
more likely,
though.
No, historically, like, statistically, it's not true. There's no evidence that supports that idea.
I would definitely have to do the crack research on this to actually prove my point. But I think that you are more likely to land a guy early on. And the real question is, are you willing to have 3 to 4 years of elite talent at that position and then be like, all right, it's over, like we're seeing with Todd Gurley and like we're seeing with other running backs across the league. David Johnson, you get the big-time extension. Are you like, okay, you know what? 4 years, I know this guy's going to be good. I feel like if you draft a running back early, you know what you're getting for the most part. And I think if you draft a running back in the middle of the draft, like the further back you draft, I think it's one of those positions where, yeah, you're going to get less. There's a less of a chance of the guy actually factoring in at all. And I don't know. I feel like there's an idea that running backs in the third round and fourth round grow on trees. And I think of guys like Amir Abdullah who were thought to be like, oh, yeah, this guy's going to be Barry Sanders 2.0 in the third round. Why was he in the third round? No, he's not going to be that.
And I think the assumption that a running back picked in the first round is some sort of rare talent and you know what you're getting, I think that's just as erroneous as the idea that the third and fourth round draft pick at running back, that those guys grow on trees. I think it's equally unpredictable at all stages and hence would never use my most valuable draft chip, a first-round pick, on something where I'm no more likely to get a good running back than I am if I pick him in the fifth round.
Rashad Penny, 6 yards a carry, essentially.
It's Danny and Gallant. I hope Rashad Penny turns out to be that good. It's great. You hope for them to beat the odds in that respect.
I mean, both of those guys. I'm concerned about Chris Carson. I brought this up a little earlier. Rashad Penny, with the torn ACL, I don't know why. It's a thing of the past now, but I think he's going to be fine next year.
It's Danny and Gallant. We're going to throw flags next as we wrap up this week on our show.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It is time for us to throw flags, pick up flags, raise flags. I think I'd like to start. I think I'd like to start by raising a flag to our show.
Yay!
Four of us. This week has been extremely fun.
You're here.
Yeah.
Hard hands.
I am present. Yeah.
Danny Hard Hands.
It's been very, very fun to be here. I don't know if people can tell the difference unless they're looking at the stream, but it's been great. I really enjoy working with you all, and this has been really, really fun.
Ditto.
Same.
Third. Fourth.
Okay, let's throw some penalty flags now. Yeah. Enough feel good.
What's going on?
Jessamine.
I'm sorry, I have to raise one too. But don't worry, it's not for you. It's for my former colleague, fellow Coug, Jim Moore, for creating the cooking people.
We've talked about this before. I don't think any of us are going, hey, he needs to throw the ball more often. To me, it's about...
But isn't that what the cooking people want?
I don't care.
I mean, it happened on their show, but it's ours now.
Underrated, Bob, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's great.
Everything about that. And then, you know, you got to give it up for Wyman.
You don't have to do the pre-snap motion all the time, do you, Dave?
I'm sorry, who is that?
Warren Sharp.
Okay, and what does he do?
He's one of the...
He runs sharp football.
Yeah, he's one of the sabermetrician style.
You know what's funny? If you were to ask like coaches that have actually coached football teams and they would be much more humble about it.
It's just like not even pure grumpiness. It's just disdain.
I'm forced
to
being
Bob in the background too. He's one of the he's one of those what you call him?
He runs sharp football.
Sabermetrics guys.
He runs sharp football.
Sharp football.
Jim Moore has a very specific tone where he is extremely precise and you can hear the derision dripping off of every word. It used to be when he would say, if you're the Legion of Boom, and there was, you knew yeah. that he was saying that this defense isn't as good as its reputation. If you're the Legion of Boom,
would you say you have a better handle on the play calling?
It also used to come out when he would say the show of record. Because Bob Gross and Tom were the show of record, and Jim did not like it. So he would say, the show of record. And that's what you hear when he says sharp football.
It's exactly it. Man, hey, Gary, you got some toothpaste on the corner of your mouth.
He almost got Gary Payton to punch him before a playoff game by pointing out there was toothpaste at the corner of Gary's mouth.
I mean, that's helpful.
Getting Gary Payton ready? No. When the coach has to run out of the locker room to haul the reporter into the training room because he's afraid a star point guard's going to get suspended for smacking a reporter, probably not the greatest.
The full story, and I'll make it short, is that Jim wanted to write an article about Gary kind of heroically coming back because he had to go to the hospital after the previous game and get an IV because he was so dehydrated. And Jim wanted to write this article, and Gary said, that ain't got nothing to do with basketball. And Jim tried and tried, and then Jim said, I'm sick of your bleep, Gary. And then Gary got in his face. And then when he got in his face, that's when Jim said the thing about the toothpaste.
And that pushed Gary over the edge.
Okay.
There's Jim's a volcano. Like, he builds volcanoes.
Yes. He gets the ungettable athlete. The athlete that always has the last word has met his match when he comes to Jim Moore. Jim Moore could make Mother Teresa curse.
Who do you think we could try? Who doesn't swear?
Romar.
Oh, well, I don't know if he's... I don't think he's in town anymore.
He didn't like Romar at the end. Jim might be able to do it.
Yeah?
Paul, flags.
Man, I hate to continue the raising. We're just in such a little positive mood.
That's right,
right
up
now.
With people.
We'll be jerks again tomorrow or on Monday, so that's fine.
So, yesterday I went to the Seattle Sports Star Award.
Star of the Year.
Sports Star of the Year, yes. It was very cool, the entire experience. And the person I was sitting next to is someone that I have not really interacted with a whole lot, but I've heard a lot of amazing things about. So basically, I just sat next to the Groz for like an hour. And, you know, we were putting some glasses of wine down and stuff. And I tell you what, I had such a fun time just sitting next to the Groz and talking about sports and just being caught up on all things Seattle sports history. It was really, really awesome time. And it was great to be there with the Groz, who, man, that guy, I really like that guy.
He's got tremendous stories.
And you mentioned the Sonics. He told me some fun Sonic stories last night.
He's got great stories.
They were great.
I think my favorite Groz stories, the two that come to mind, were the time he was chased by George the Animal Steel at a WWF event.
What?
Yes. Groz was the ring announcer, and George the Animal Steel came down there, head full of steam, furious because he believed that the Groz had left him at a bar previously. And Groz got a great story of hitting the ropes and running away because one of the other wrestlers had said, I don't know what you did to the animal kid, but don't let him catch you, because if he catches you, he's got to do something to you. And Groz was terrified. The second time was he was at Shea Stadium, looked over from the top deck, and saw someone breaking into his car out in the parking lot. Oh, God.
I like that one because I grew up going to Shea Stadium, and I could picture it exactly. Yeah.
Lydia!
It's along the cooking lines, so I'm going to raise a flag for, yeah, them coining the term the cooking people, because it also got me thinking about what type of cooking people would they be? Would they, you know, Paul, you kind of did like the soft-spoken kind, I want to say like midday chef host that you could see on the Cooking Network, but that's not how I view like analytics Twitter or Seahawks Twitter. They're the Gordon Ramsays of the world, like they're yelling at you constantly and just expecting you to be better than you are. So I just really like that comparison, and it also made me, you know, go get Gordon Ramsay sound.
Where's your fight, man?
It's here,
where
chef.
Where is it?
I've got it, chef.
Then wake up, you donut.
Yes, chef.
Wake up, you donut. You That's why I feel like they're yelling at people.
They okay. do.
Use so the cocktail stick.
Use a cocktail stick.
We're going to need to make this a thing.
I would agree with that.
Yep.
I would like to raise a flag as well, and it is to Paul Gallant, and it's for actually an error that he made in the show.
Oh.
Because it has spawned a great idea. You tried to get us to fill in the blank. A name had escaped your mind.
It was like playing charades, essentially.
And you were giving us different identifiers. It was Kansas City Chiefs, it was Big Hitter, and it was fullback. Those were the three. Did I miss any that you were given?
No, that was it.
Because when you went to
Steve
Big
Atwater
Hitter,
hit him.
Right. Oh, that's, see, I thought you were Steve Atwater Hitter. I thought you were saying
no,
that Atwater, I Atwater that, like hitter.
Because I was trying to get to, like, is Eric Weddle a Hall of Famer? And then I just got, like, stuck on Steve Atwater hitting this guy, and I just totally forgot who it was.
And it was Christian Okoye, and the thing that Paul did not say, which would have made it clear, Nigerian. That's all you would have needed to say. Nigerian NFL, and Christian Okoye would have been the first thing. We are going to start playing, what is the, it's the game where there's like banned words that you can't say.
Taboo?
Taboo. We'll start playing Taboo, and we will have to guess an athlete that another person is thinking, but there will be forbidden words that cannot be used in the description. I think it could be very, very fun.
I think that would be fun as well. And yeah, I was a victim of 2020 there. I was, for some reason, I was nervous to say Nigerian, and I wasn't sure what the next word was. I wasn't sure if it was night train, nightmare, nighthawk. I don't know. I was like, I don't know what the next word is, so I'm just not going to do it.
You don't want to mess up a good nickname.
No, you don't. Absolutely not.
That's going to do it for us. He is Paul Gallant, who has experienced firsthand the dangers of flag football after Robert Edwards' tremendous injury precedent.
Yeah, basically, I'm like Robert Edwards. Yep. Very, very similar. He is Danny O'Neill, and he taught me some really things that I should be focusing on when I see another man wearing a certain pair of shoes. So long. Farewell.
You should not. Do not trust a man who wears all black Air Force Ones.
And remember that this weekend.
If he has all black Air Force Ones on, that person is not to be trusted. Like, that's just general, like, that's a rule of life. And Paul had no idea about that. If you see someone wearing a Pendleton flannel hybrid mashup Air Force Ones, those are fine. Mess with that dude. Like, you can poke him all you want because he's, like, harmless, which I'm wearing right now.
Knowing is half the battle. Have a great weekend, everybody.
It was just so much fun.
Is that what the cooking people want?
I don't care.